Afterward. Now let me say, I mean, what I'm going to discuss today are elementary things. Actually, I'll deal with terminology, but in my opinion, halachic terminology is very important. And each term expresses an idea. And I'm going to deal with the terminology centered around Jewish holidays. And I'll try, to follow the lead of the terminology and to analyze the very essence of Jewish holidays. It is a strange, what should I say, paper. When I sat down to write, I had something else in mind. But the baby who came into this world is a different one. But I believe that you'll follow me and it will help you in understanding the Jewish philosophy of holidays. When we speak of festivals, we must distinguish between two terms. One term is Yom Kadosh, or the way people in the halachic lingo say, Kedushat HaYom. The difference is that in Yom Kadosh, the Kadosh in adjective, they say Kedushat HaYom is the Kedushah substantive. But this is one group of holidays which can be described as Yom Kadosh, or Yamim Kedushim, or those who possess Kedushat HaYom. There is another group of holidays which we classify as Yom Tov or Yomim Tovim. Both terms, that of Kedushat HaYom and that of Yom Tov, are of biblical origin. They are certainly of Talmudic origin as well. Kedushat HaYom, the whole concept of Kedushat HaYom, are days which are endowed with holiness. Usually when we speak about days, I mean, we never think of something substantive, of something having a content, an essence in it. The philosophy is called essentia or substantia. To us, time is not something living. It's not a subject to which attributes can be ascribed and traits actually predicated. To us, time is like, in the Kantian manner, is just, it is just a mathematical concept, nothing else. I mean, now modern physics combine time with space, so it is empty, as empty as space is. It is just one of the coordinate system. It's one coordinate of the system within which we try to explain the world, I mean, the cosmic dynamics. The Judaism time was something else, was some a living entity. Living entity, there was substance to time, there was individuality to time, there was essence to time, and you could ascribe attributes to time. The same manner as you do ascribe attributes to people. You say, nice person, good person, handsome person, a holy person, or an evil person. You can also speak of time. Holy time, holy day, an evil day. A third day, we actually have effect in our colloquial use in all languages, in English, in German, in any language, an evil day. But why one in modern men thinks that an evil day means a day on which evil, somehow an evil event took place? And the others say, Oruhayim, it means the day itself is evil, the day itself is cursed. And the same applies to positive attributes. When we say a holiday, it means the day itself is holy. Not a day on which man somehow experiences holiness. Well, this is not a big rationalization. And when we approach the others, we should many times try to understand the others in its own categories. Whether they appear fashionable to us or perhaps old-fashioned, it's completely irrelevant. We have to understand the others in its unique singular categories. And time in the others is something substantive, something essential. It is individuality. I would even say it's a personality. It is not just a part of a coordinate, of a mathematical coordinate system. So hence, the pasuk says, "Vayvorech Elokim es Yom Hashvi'i, Vayikadosh Eisei." God has blessed the seventh day and hallowed it. In Nehemiah we find that on Rosh Hashanah the Ezra recited the law and the people cried, so the Alvi marched in the law and the Levites tried to silence the people, that saying that it is forbidden to cry on Rosh Hashanah, but they describe the day, the character day, Kikodosh Hayom Ladeneno. The day is holy and dedicated to God. The term Yom Tov is also mentioned in the Bible, namely, where Yom Tov in the Bible. Where? In the Kirakar, in the Skola Testa. Eisim es Yom Abu Asa, Rechidesh Ador, Simcha Umishte, V'Yom Tov. Of course, we in our halachic lingo use both terms continually. Sometimes we speak about Kedushas again, sometimes we speak about Yom Tov. Quite often we don't discriminate between these two terms. Remarkable is one detail. While we apply the epithet of Yom Tov to all holidays without any discrimination, we call Pesach Yom Tov, we call Shavuot Yom Tov, Rosh Hashanah Yom Tov, even Yom Kippur we call Yom Tov. Sukkot. We have never said about Shabbos that it's a Yom Tov. Never. Shabbos with Yom Tov, it is two extremes, two poles. And man somehow swings like a pendulum between those two poles. But we have never found, we have never come across in our Halach literature or in the Bible or in any kind, in any commentary, the Shabbos be called in terms Yom Tov. Apparently Shabbos is not Yom Tov. What? But anyway, we have been dealing now with this Kedushat Hayom, this Yomim Kedoshim. But for instance, Chanukah Purim are Yomim Tovim, not our Shabbat. Yet, they do not possess Kedushat Hayom. They are not Yomim Kedoshim. Concerning Purim, we have already pointed out the description of the day as Yom Tov is mentioned in the Megillah. As regards Hanukkah, and of course, Hanukkah is not mentioned to Kisra Kiddush. There is no Megillah of Hanukkah in Kisra Kiddush. So, we have to simply to refer to Megillah Tani. Megillah Tani, quoted by the Gemara in Shabbos, that Kofalev had with Amit Bey. The Brisa states, Rishona Abor אוסם יום טוב, בחבר וידוי, או בשמחה וחבר. זאת בנין יום טוב, איזת וכבות החלק את זה. However, as you mentioned, the lack gedusha sayer. Uvar Shabbos and Gimel Regolim, Uvar Shashone and Yom Kippur, Uvar Yom Yudoshim, Chanuk and Purim are Yemei Chol. Now let me ask a simple question. What does Kedusha Sayyid mean? What is it actually? Yes, correct. When we say that the day is holy, Ki Kodesh Hayim Ladeneinu, what does it mean? In Halachic terms. What does Sayyid means at the very outset is simply Kedusha Sayyid denotes or signifies an inner endowment, as I told you before. Or shall I say, it is now nicer to become a colloquial term, a charisma, a nest, or hidden in the very substance or essence of the day. And this charisma, this inner quality, it's a mysterious quality, which is even in the very essence of the day, expresses itself halachically, as it was said before. Here, you need some halach, prohibition against war. Chanukah Purim do not precipitate is some halach, apparently they lack that specific endowment which usually expresses itself in Nisan Malach. Wherever there is no Nisan Malach, one cannot speak of Kedusha Sayyid. The latter is inseparable from the idea of absolute rest, but not so much rest as absolute cessation or complete stoppage, discontinuation. It's easy to say that the Kedusha Sayyid expresses itself in Issa Meloch. Could somebody prove it by quoting a text? We say it as a say in Birkat HaMazon, Ki Yom Zeh Godel VeKodesh Lishbos Day VeLonuach Day VeYahavo Ki Mitzvah Sretinecho. For this is a great and holy day dedicated Lishbos Day to cessation or discontinuation and to rest. Of course, with love, in accordance with thy will. Apparently the adjectives Godel the Kodesh are linked up, inseparably linked up with Shvisa and Menucha. And there is no doubt that Shvisa is by far a more important attribute of the day than Menucha. Living off and resting. So let's not forget that the term Kedusha, quite often in the Bible, has the connotation of separateness, of being separate. Or it has the meaning of being not common, or a meaning of uncommonness, singularity, distinctiveness. As a matter of fact, the term Kodesh also has the connotation of distance, of being remote, being far, far away. When you say Kadosh, 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 Avayet Tzvoye, Melech Olaret Kredi, so you indicate this great paradox in our religious experience, that on one hand we experience God as remote, as distant, as abiding in infinity, in the recesses of transcendence, And on the other hand, God is my companion, right here. Kadosh, 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 remote, exalted, above and beyond everything, above and beyond the cosmos, the great, the unity, the boundless universe, and at the same time, Melech Olam Atzvege, he fills out the universe, and he's right here near me. That's why in Chabad, the two terms, Memalit Kolam and the Shigit Kolam, are same terms. So basically, Kedusha means non-time distance, remoteness, being unreachable. Therefore, when we say Shabbos is the Yom Tevim, that has been set aside as base of rest and discontinuation or leaving off or cessation are not ordinary common days. Whoever else possesses Kedusha is not, cannot be a common entity, cannot be a common person. There is something unique about it, something singular, something different. So if Shabbos is Yom Tovim, in doubt is Kedusha, it means that in doubt is uniqueness. They are many times remote from the ordinary way of life, or from ordinary days. They are not ordinary, they are not common days. They are what I use the term, they are freaks. That is it. You know very well. Sometimes we may admire a freak, and sometimes he's very annoying. A freak can be very annoying. So Shabbos Yom Tov can be terribly annoying. Annoying and interfering with our everyday conveniences. A little pleasure. It's exactly the, what shall I say? This reflects exactly Kedusha. Even Jihadis as such is sometimes very annoying and very unwelcome to the ordinary man. They are unusual, the unusual days. What happens on that day? Nothing in particular. Just the workaday routine is interrupted on that day. What happens on that day? The established program of human activities. What is that program? What is that? Where is this program mentioned in the Bible? Human being has a certain routine, a certain program. This program has not changed. This program has not changed over the centuries and millennia. It's the same. The program, in my opinion, you will find, yes, correct, probably beautifully described in Bochanash. Tizrach HaShemesh, HaShemesh Yeisofun, Ve'alne Nesam Yerbotzum, Yeitze Odom Lefo'olei, Ve'alavidose Yadar. The sun rises, they shrink away, the young lions, and they hide in their dens. Man goes forth unto his work and to his labor until the evening. That routine of Yizrach HaShemesh, Yitrodom Lefo'olei, Vladosei Adorah, and that monotony is discontinued. If the Yom is not an ordinary day, but a Yom Gadol V'Kadosh, a great day and a holy day. Of course, even on the Yom Gadol V'Kadosh, the sun rises. The universe is not different. Certainly the young lions couch in their dens. And the Yom Gadol V'Kadosh, but man does not go forth unto his work or to his labor. No. Today man has a different, a unique schedule. What the schedule is, we don't know. This distinctiveness, as far as the schedule is concerned, the change sanctifies and hallows the day and makes it the Yom Gadol HaKadosh. Why is it the Yom Gadol HaKadosh? Because it is a unique day. The question arises, what is the nature and the essence, not of a Yom Gadol HaKadosh, but of Yom Tov? That is the price of Kedushas Hayom. Chanukah Purim are the price of this Hayom. They are stripped of this Hayom. Melachos Tamisino. On the one hand, the very of Chanukah Purim, it does not differ from an ordinary way, from the ordinary day. On Chanukah Purim, man goes forth to his work and to his labor until the evening. On the other hand, man is called to act or to engage in specific action which the halacha calls mitzvah again on those days. For it's not doing, a man is obligated to recite the Megillah, on Hanukkah to light the candles, to say Hallel, to abstain from Hefted Vitanis, from grief, from fasting, and public mourning. The conclusion is obvious. Even Hanukkah Purim are endowed with some charisma, with some singular quality not to be found in an ordinary day. Of course, they are not commendation. Here they are, and this is my term. Yomim Tovim, of course, but I would say Yomim Kvuyim. They're being singled out. Or Yomim Mufchorim. They've been selected out of 365 days, 8 days of Hanukkah and 1 or 2 days of Purim have been selected and set apart. And they are also different. There is somehow individuality. There is character to them. It is obvious that they are not ordinary days. So if this be so, so the question arises, what is the difference between Yom Kedushim or Yom Tovim, or rather not to, because to avoid confusion, I'll call it Yom Kvuyim or Yom Mufchorim. What's the difference? Of course, the halachic answer is clear. Yom Kedushim are workers' days. Yom Kvuyim are work days. Yet one asks, what is the root of this distinction? But apparently there is a different experience related to Yom Kedushim than the experience which is associated with Yom Kvuyim, like Hanukkah Purim. The answer that this is that Yom Kedushim are all midrashim, biblical origin, and Yom Kvuyim are of rabbinic origin, I mean, it would not satisfy us. Let me give you the answer in one sentence, and then I'll elaborate this sentence. That's exactly what the paper is out to accomplish. The answer, I believe, is as follows. The idea of Yom Kedushim, or the charisma of Yom Kedushim, expresses itself in human, what shall I say, introspection or withdrawal. The experience of Yom Kedushim, of Yom Kvuyim, manifests itself in human openness and outer directiveness. I'll elaborate that. Let me explain it. Wherever the Torah spoke of Shabbos, not only of Shabbos, of the three holidays as well, namely Kippur and Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, Purim, and Rosh Hashanah, namely Pesach, Shmuyos, and Regolim, as well as Rosh Hashanah. Wherever the Torah spoke of Shabbos or other holidays, it never failed to mention that the day, the charismatic or holy day, not holiday, but the holy day is related and dedicated to the Lord, to the Almighty. The Yom HaShvi'i Shabbat La B'Shem Elokecha. Shemitah Shemitah B'Kresis HaKol Melachtecho, the Yom HaShvi'i Shabbat La B'Shem Elokecha. The seventh day is a Sabbath unto the Lord. Chag HaSukkis Tasseloch, Shivas Yomim Tochech La B'Shem Elokecha. The Feast of Sukkot. You observe the Feast of Sukkot. And you celebrate 7 days unto the Lord. Chag Shavuos, Tasel HaBeshem Melekecha. The Feast of Weeks, you celebrate unto the Lord. What does it mean? What does it mean? The word HaBeshem Melekecha. What do the word, the seventh day is a Sabbath unto the Lord, mean? What idea is behind those strange, enigmatic words? Unto the Lord, thank God. Should it? Would it be insufficient if you had said, Sheish Hashem Tavod, Vesis HaKol Malach Tachot, V'yim HaShvi'i Shabbat. The idea would have been conveyed to us, the 6 days we are allowed to work, and the seventh day we have to cease to work. I believe that those enigmatic words express an exalted idea in Yahadus. I would say it is the idea which was mentioned by the Eitz HaChaim, the Ari Yamir, the founder of the Luryanik school in mysticism, and later developed and made the central idea of Chabad by the Talmud, by the founder of Chabad. The idea is what is known, whoever studied it, as Soda Tzimtzum, the mystery of self-contraction, or the mystery of self-limitation, or the mystery of self-restriction, or the mystery of withdrawal and retreat. As a matter of fact, this mystery has stimulated also the controversy between Chassidim and Mishnayim. If we consider this controversy from a philosophical viewpoint, what does this mystery of Tzimtzum say? I mean, you know, let me explain it in very simple terms. The mystery of Tzimtzum says that creation of the world is a sacrificial act on the part of the Almighty. As if Kariyochet, the Almighty has brought a sacrifice. He gave something up. Then he said, Yehi Eir, let there be light. Or by saying, Yehi Eir, the Almighty man, let there be a world. Before the universe came into existence, God was one, His name was one. By creating a world in general, and by creating men in particular, God had surrendered His aloneness of being alone, and His loneliness, again, being alone, to the world. In order to create the world, He allowed finiteness, in this case, a physical world, a physical universe, to share in his infinite being, in his infinite existence. He allowed somebody else or something else to share with him in what was exclusively his own. Prior to creation, there was only one infinite, all-inclusive, and all-encompassing, and all-embracing existence. God. There was nothing beside him. God had Karyochen to withdraw and to contract himself in order to permit the world that in order to permit the world to be born out of nothingness. Yetzirah means an act of self-restricting on the part of infinity and permitting finitude to exist beside infinity. Something which is nonsensical from the viewpoint of logic. From the viewpoint of logic, you all know that if you take an infinite number, you try to add a finite number to the infinite number, what will you get in some trouble? An infinite number. So basically the whole existence of the world is an absurdity from one viewpoint. It's nonsensical. We don't exist. But how can finitude exist beside infinity? It's mathematically wrong. It's logically wrong. And this absurdity is responsible for our existence, that the world came into existence. This is the great mystery of Tzimtzum. I cannot develop it fully. In accordance with the Lurianic doctrine, which was developed later by the founder of Chabad. It is true that in particular, the creation of man in God's image was a sacrificial act on the part of Kadibor. The mere fact that he endowed man with imago Dei, with image, with his image, this itself is already an act of giving up. Because there is somebody who is divine. And he endowed man not only with the image, but he endowed God with great talent, with extraordinary capabilities, with numerous skills God bestowed upon him, honor and glory which belong exclusively to God. It's very interesting. Sitting with every Shabbos, well, in my opinion, it is more impressive. The custom of Mishnagim is by far more impressive. We say it only once a year. That's what I'm referring to. But there is v'amuno lechei elamim. Abino v'agrocho lechei elamim. Ahid v'ahodo lechei elamim. All those attributes actually they still belong exclusively to God. But God in his generosity has bestowed some of the attributes on man. Man is a productive, indeed he is a creative being. God allowed man to consider himself master and lord of his environment. Till Shatter Tachas Ragov, he put everything under his feet. God was generous with man. He even urged man to explore the universe. And he advised him to reach out, even for the boundless and the fantastic. Even for that which is unreachable. And man, regretfully, many times, is mistaken. He actually looks upon himself as if he were a creator, as if he indeed owned everything, himself and the world. What we call in Kabbalah the Nochash HaKadmeni, the serpent of old, or the ancient serpent. The ancient serpent of Genesis suggested to man that he may conquer the world and crown himself as God. God tolerated. God does not take away man's skill, man's talent, man's capabilities, even though from time to time man misuses them. He becomes arrogant and also very foolish. On the Sabbath and on every Yom Gadol V'Kadosh, and a great day and a holy day arise, man is called upon to cease, not to rest. Rest is the result. But he's called upon to cease. What should he see? What activity? What activity should he see? To play the role of Master and Lord. To acknowledge that he possesses nothing, owes nothing, masters nothing, and he is nothing. That he is not in control. Certainly, that he is neither in control of the world, nor is he in control of himself. Or of his own talents and skills. Yom Kadosh is not so much a day of rest, of menucha. It is merely a day of shlisa, of stopping, discontinuing, giving up. While menucha denotes rest, shlisa has the connotation of living off, of discontinuing. Something which one is accustomed to. What is this something? What is this something? No, this is all of it. This is what? Why was work chosen as the means of man's humbling himself and admitting the truth and, so to say, and pleading guilty of arrogance, of false pretenses, as another exaggerated notion of himself? Why was work chosen by the Torah as the symbol of that basic change in man which should take place on the Yom Gadol V'Kadosh? For two reasons. Work basically is important for two reasons. Work is the source of human power and glory. No other creature is basically a working being, a working creature. No other creature is capable of constructing works. If the animal sometimes is busy, but whatever the animal does is not work in a philosophical sense. It is pushed by some mechanical instinct. There is no intention, there is no plan. Then there is no productivity. Thank you. there was no productivity. And the animal doesn't produce. It's carefully, but there is no creativity. An animal doesn't trade. Only man is a working being. I understand by that. A productive being. And through work, and only through work, man manifests his unlimited power. That has really upmirked him. It's just a little bit, a bit below the angels. The reason is because man has capacity for work. When, for instance, the Greek mythology, and it's still over in the Greek philosophy, into Plato's ideal republic, considered work as a degrading occupation for men. On the contrary, they always dreamt of the golden age, or an existence which would not require work of men, because work was just good for slaves. Don't forget the Greeks had a slave society, but for the freemen, for the Hellen, for the Hellenistic race, work is degrading, it's below the dignity. Yahadus came out, the first one. Work is dignifying, redeeming, cleansing. Who works? Even Kaviyahu does. They call Melachti Asherasa. And if man wants to reach dignity, greatness, sweep, and dust, there is only one means which he can employ. This is work. In work, there is another aspect to work. Work is the cohesive force which unites individuals into a group. Sociologically, very important. Work is the most potent factor which pulls man out of his hiding, out of his hiding, and merges individuals into communities. There's a simple reason here. Everybody knows it. One cannot acquire old skills which are indispensable for the gratification of man's needs. And therefore, one must exchange one must exchange services with his contemporaries. The exchange of services brings about interdependence and interaction, which in turn leads to fraternization or to the coalescence of individuals into one entity. Call it community, call it society, call it space. I mean, the name is completely irrelevant. The constant trading and exchanging interweaves the individual into community and the isolated I into the texture of a together existence or an existence in community. In short, the role which work plays in promoting a together existence or a community existence is tremendous. If people didn't have to work, if people didn't work, they would never form a community or a state. They would never coalesce and unite in the group. Because each individual would feel happy in his isolation and in his place of hiding. There wouldn't have been this magnetic force which pulls the individual toward the community. As a matter of fact, here you address again is in conflict with the philosophy of the Age of Reason. The philosophy of the Age of Reason, although the individual did not understand the community, so in explaining the community, we had to introduce a new concept, like the social contract, which is very artificial and very synthetic in here. Because to the soul, Montesquieu, Voltaire, and all the philosophers of the Age of Reason, there was basically the individual is the great being, not the communities. That's why such a story, the story of Robinson Crusoe, was born during the Age of Reason. It couldn't have been born now. With Marxism rampant and communism, expanding quickly, because the Marxism, the individual means nothing, the community reigns supreme. The others have never agreed with this theory that the individual can get along all by himself, alone, on an island. The others have other opinion that lonely man cannot meet the task that has been assigned to him by his creator. What task has been assigned to man by his creator? We have to the chambre, to dress and to keep, to work and to cut and to cultivate. Working man, this man cannot afford to be idle, but he's got to be a working being, so he needs a helper. For he previously saw them with others. SLAs are canadians. It's not good for men to be alone. I shall make a helper opposite him. In short, to working men is always what we call it in our Lachic literature, in Rishus HaRabim. He's on the highway. Manufacturing, trading, exchanging goods and services, talking, arguing, fighting, helping. But always be somebody. No wonder that Chava was created the very instant Adam was charged with the task of Noach the Lishomor. He was placed in the Garden of Eden, charged with the task of Noach the Lishomor, to be a working being, and also, and as a working being, he needed help. So he was created. No wonder, I see it every day, but that's the reason that time's still active, that people retire from business or from profession, find out, and quite quickly, very fast, that they are unneeded, lonely, and that society abandoned them, including their own children, and the world passes them by. Because if a man stops working, there is no need for him to maintain communication lines with the community, with the society. Somehow he expels himself. He expels himself. He excludes himself from the working community. If there is no work, there are no responsibilities, the communal ties, little by little, disappear, are broken. And on the Sabbath, God told man to stop working. What did he want to achieve by that? What was God out to achieve by telling man to stop working? He told man to cease to work. Leave off in the middle, retreat, and rest. In other words, man is supposed but I want you not to misunderstand me. On Shabbos, to leave society. Men retreat, well, using the Buddha term, from the Tao existence, means I am Tao existence, into an I existence, I existence. He retreats on the Sabbath, this is the experience of the Sabbath, into privacy and aloneness. On the Sabbath, the individual gains supremacy over the community. He withdraws from conquest and acquisition, from work, and if he withdraws from conquest and acquisition and work, then he also withdraws from his co-workers and partners and associates. Into the mysterious abode of an I, of a lonely I existence. It's quite remarkable that in Beshalach, when Moses revealed on behalf of the Almighty the mystery of Shabbos to the people, so the slogan of Shabbos became, Al Yetzei Shvu Tachtachem, sit, stay in your places. Al Yetzei Yish Min Kenei Bayom HaShvi'i, no man go out of his place on the seventh day. No fraternization. No unitedness, I would say. No coalescence. Man is alone. And he should experience himself as a being alone. On the Sabbath, God tolerates no competition. He does not want to share man with anybody else, the society. Hence, he told men retreat from society. The latter has no place on the east. The Yom HaShvi'i, now you understand the word, the Yom HaShvi'i Shabbat Radishem Rechecha. The seventh day is up to the Lord. The seventh day is the Sabbath unto thy God. Everything belongs to Him. Cease to be a slave to thy work. Discontinue being a servant to society. Be exclusively mine. And Sabbath, the idea of Sabbath, is man's aloneness. If man is alone, he is also with God. The Kedusha of Shabbat, the charisma of Shabbat, expresses itself in the return of man to God and to himself. In the severance of the individual from the working society, that act of severing hallows the day and renders it a Yom Godel Vekodesh. Separation from society is ipso facto liberation from society. Man terminates his transient relations with his fellow man and establishes another relation which is permanent, communion with God. Don't ask me any questions about it. Of course, people do a lot of visiting on Shabbat. So the impression. And the impression which is conveyed is this Shabbat were a day of socializing, of fraternizing, of being together. It's not true. Perhaps I'll explain to you later. But there is only one exception to the rule, which is there made, of men being alone on Shabbos. And that's as far as study is concerned. Study is concerned. Well, if I have time, I'll explain. However, let's continue. However, Judaism thought, here we come to the direct nature of Judaic approach. However, Judaism thought highly of existence in community as well. God is not only the father of the individuals, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, but of the community as an entity. He's Elokei Yisrael as well. Judaism's approach to the problem of millennial-old problem, which came up in the Greek, pre-Socratic Greek philosophy. The problem of individual versus community. Let me use a Talmudic phrase. Same in my order, which is to be preferred, an individual existence or a communal existence. The approach of Judaism was one of dialectics, a dialectical approach. Namely, Judaism has accepted, as in many other cases, accepted the thesis as well as the antithesis. Judaism says as follows about this problem. On the one hand, if man is completely united with the community, holy in Rishus Harim, immersed in the concern of the many, and not paying attention to his own needs, or to his being self. I don't mean in a selfish manner, in a egotistic manner. He's liable to lose his very power, his very humanity, his original trust and sensitivity, the fantastic resources of human creativity. And I'm convinced about it. To be found not in public man, but in private man. Not in man's communion with others, but in man's communion with himself. The greatness, the genius in man is to be discovered in the monologue, not in the dialogue between man, between the I and the thou. The greatness is found in the philosophy. Not in teachers. In his loneliness awareness and sense of singleness, being single. I don't mean single that man. I mean single that no one else is like me. This is basic. Chazal developed this, Kishim Shepard, to say a missionary, Skadi, say a missionary. Hazal did not believe in doubles as far as the countenance is concerned and the face is concerned. He also believed that man is that each man, each individual is a freak. That's spiritual. Nice. Give up.
There would be Delum Omnis contra Omnis, as Hobbes said. The war of everybody against everybody. There is an element of Sheker, of Antus, in human agreement, in agreement with two individuals. This means carrying the theory of individualism to an extreme. But I'm convinced that the greatness of man is to be found in Rishus HaYachid. In the four cubits of his individualistic, lonely existence. The corporate state, the socialist or communist society, tries hard to level off the distinctiveness of the individual. By so trying, the Marxist or communist society destroys the very sensitivity and creativity of man. It's a fact. For instance, Russia was famous for its literature. Russian literature, actually, the 19th century, I believe, perhaps it was the most profound and the most sensitive literature. It transcended the French and certainly the Germans as far as the novel is concerned. Let's think about that, as far as the novel is concerned. It dried up. This literature dried up. The advent of communism in Russia. And don't tell me because the Russians don't allow. Even the books which were printed on them, published in the abroad, outside of Russia, are not great artistic works. One got a Nobel Prize for it. It was purely for political reasons. The Kremlin was right, as far as the Nobel Prize was concerned. But now, I couldn't compare that with Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, or Turgenev, something. You couldn't compare. There was no sweet. There was no depth. It left the mysterious quality on here. It's Russian literature. Because the corporate state cannot produce sensitive souls. Of course, you pay the toll of the road. The artist is the first one to pay the toll of the road. Then comes the scientist. But the artist in the corporate state pays the toll of the road. Not because the state is not liberal enough. Simply, the resources of creativity dry up. You have to be found only an individual who rebels against society, an individual who has the guts to say to society what he thinks, an individual who is introspective, an individual who tries to find out who he is. And since the mere question, who am I, is forbidden in Russia, it's heresy. So if you don't answer the question, who am I, so there is no need for literature. Because all literature is concerned with one question. Since Homer and shall I say, about what the human being is, who he is, and particularly who am I, and what do I stand for. Yadus encouraged man to rebel quite often against society, to act like an individual, and to be different and unique. No one who didn't study halacha properly has any idea, can imagine, how much freedom the halachic scholar has in interpreting halacha, in so-called chidushim, in being creative in the halachic field. The Yadus has encouraged. In the famous story of Rabbi Lezer, he was in controversy with his colleagues, and they stood up, and they counted and accepted, the opinion of the majority. And then, there was intervention on part of the Almighty in favor of Rabbi Lezer, and he did not accept this intervention. Shows how much freedom the halachic scholar has. Of course, if he's a scholar, I want you to know. Those who claim freedom, who say the halacha is not free, are not scholars. This is the problem. But a scholar enjoys unlimited freedom. Because the individual is the creative agent in halacha, as well as in many other fields. And that's why you cannot limit his freedom on him, his authority to express opinions on him, the way he understands. God created just one man, Adam. He concluded his covenant just with one individual, Abraham. The first Redeemer was a lonely individual, Moses. And very strange, and while the tablets given to the entire community the first time, they were quickly set up, the second Luchot, the second tablet, entrusted to Moses alone, as an individual, no one could accompany Moses up the mount, are still existence. whom you steal are committed to them. This means you have it understood very well. The greatness of the individual. And in order to be great, he should not be completely enmeshed in society. On the other hand, you have to assert complete immersion in oneself. Leads to serious emotional problems. I'm not a psychiatrist, so I can tell you what kind of problems there are. I know there are problems. And egocentricity is not only moral, but also a personalistic anomaly. And that's why to say the individual reigns supreme is impossible. This was the thesis. Now I'm trying to develop the antithesis. Moreover, the basic virtues, which are at the apex of our ethical hierarchy, like compassion, love, the sharing in one's tragedy and distress, those basic virtues, derived from the Midas HaChesed, from Chesed, will lose their significance should the individual live in isolation. Robinson Crusoe could not practice compassion. He had no one to sympathize with. He could not love anybody. He could love only one person, himself. How can the individual who withdrew from society experience compassion and love for his fellow man? How can the individual love his fellow man which is emotionally remote from him? And such an individual is portrayed in the Bible. Well, some individual was punished, and then when he learned how to live in community, he must restore his own glory. So it is pretty glory. One said he lived during the time of Abraham, another one said during the time of Moses. Another one said he lived during the time of David. The fourth one said he lived during the time of Mordechai and Esther. Anyway, I don't know any reason. But he didn't leave any marks. He disappeared tracelessly, Job. And he did not. Then Abraham was engaged in a struggle. And I'll speak about Abraham as the only person. The whole world on one side of the river, and here on the other side of the river. It's quite characteristic of...